You Top This, starring Senator Ford.
Good evening.
Harry Hirschfield.
Howdy.
And Joe Laurie Jr.
Hello.
And now, Robert Wilson.
Good evening, friends. Welcome to Can You Top This, our unrehearsed gagathon. Our three wits do not know what jokes have been chosen until the people's representative, Peter Donald, tells them on the air. Our three gagsters have no scripts. They rely on memory and ability to switch jokes and make them fit the subject.
And this is your host, Roger Bauer. Then our panelists try to top the score on the Laugh Eater registered by Peter Donald.
Each time our wits fail to top your score, you win an additional $5, which means you may win $25.
Can You Top This is made possible by our fine sponsor. Won't you please listen to this?
So, on with the laughter. Are you ready, gentlemen?
Ready.
I guess so.
All right, good. Our first joke this evening comes from Mr. C.C. Jordan of Fayetteville, North Carolina, and it's on the subject of information, gentlemen.
Please.
Please, yes.
If you don't mind.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. And now we'll turn that joke over to Peter Donald and see what happens, Pete.
Well, this happened during the war, about the time that the railroads had to hire a lot of women employees. You know, they had them in there as information clerks and ticket sellers and conductors and even engineers, if you recall. They had women engineers. You remember the time when the crossings used to whistle at the trains? It was quite a thing. Well, during this time, a bunch of soldiers were assigned to a camp down south, and they walked in one day to the station to find out what train they should take. They walked up to this gal at the Information Bureau, and one soldier said, look, miss, he says, we want to find the train for Camp Abandon All Hope, Louisiana. So the dame looked at him.
She says, I'm very, very sorry. I never heard of that place. I'm very sorry. I don't seem to see it in my why don't you try another railroad?
Soldiers insisted. They said, we're supposed to come here and get a train for Camp Abandon All Hope, Louisiana. So she asked everybody and looked up all the books.
Funny, she said, this is awful. Gee, with you poor boys, you're going to be so late and everything. I just think I better call up the War Department in Washington and they'll know.
So she called the War Department.
She said, hello, I would like some very, very important information, you know, about a camp called Abandon All Hope, Louisiana. I got some very, very cute boys here, and they got to get down there right away, and I want to find out where it is. You know? I said, oh, really? No kidding. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you know? And all the time... Isn't that funny? Well, thank you.
And she hung up and she turned to the boy. She says, I'm very sorry.
The War Department says the location of that camp is a military secret.
$1,000 on the Laugh Meter Award.
Let's see, $1,000, that automatically gives Mr. Jordan $25. You gentlemen are out just for the laughs. I hope you get them. Joe Laurie had his hand up first.
Well, I have a short preface. This doesn't count. It's about two goose meet. One says, hey, Jim, he says, what's black and white and red all over? The guy says, oh, I know what that is. That's a newspaper. He says, that's right. He says, now what's black and blue and red all over? Is black and blue and red all over? I don't know. What is it? He says, an Indian that just fell down the stairs.
I like those
guys. It was a preface.
Casey comes to this country and he's never seen a parrot before. So he visits Mrs. Doyle's home and she has a parrot. And the parrot is walking all along the kitchen floor. And he looks at it and the parrot is saying, Mama, Mama. Polly, what's cracker? Mama, Polly, what's cracker? So he looks at it in amazement. He says, Mrs. Doyle, he says, would you give me some information, please? May I ask you a question? She says, yeah, sure, go ahead. He says, was your daughter born like that with all those feathers?
That was a bird as far as the laugh meter was concerned that time, Joe. That's 1,000. Harry Hirschfield had his hand up.
Well, I've got a few, too. I want as a preface, too. A teacher says to a pupil, and it was the final examination, and he was passing, a little trouble passing, Sammy was passing the examination, with only one more question. She says, now, this is the last question. Sammy, how do you spell imbecile? She says, I-M-M-B-E-S-S-L-L-L. She says, the dictionary spells it I-M-B-E-C-I-L-E. She says, you didn't ask me how the dictionary spelled it. You asked me how I spell it. know, a fella joined a lodge. He put in his application for a lodge. And you know, in a lot of the secret lodges, they have these aesthetic lodges. They send out for candidates. They send out some of the members who teach him the ritual that he's going to have when he comes for the final examination for the ritual. So they went to him and said to him, now, this is a very important organization now, and we're very aesthetical and very symbolic. Now, and among the questions they're going to ask you, the most important is the first one. They're going to say, what do you most desire in life? And you're supposed to say, light. Oh, he said, that's easy. Remember now, they'll say, what is the most important thing in life? And you say, light. What do you most desire? So he goes there and he studies a while, studies. On the day of the initiation, he goes in a half a dozen saloon, he gets good and cockeyed. And finally comes to the initiation and they say to him, what do you most desire in life? He said, beer. Fella said, light. He said, no, dark.
$1,000 on the Laffy for that one, Ward.
That's another $1,000. How about you, Senator Ford? Are you in this round?
Yeah, I had time enough to think of three or four. This one, Mr. Wilson, does not count, this first one. Up in my hometown, a motorist was in a hurry and he forgot to make a turn. So he ran through a farmyard and right into the kitchen of a farmhouse where the farmer's wife was cooking dinner. And she never even looked up or continued to stir the stew. And he was a little bit chagrined, and he said, can you tell me how to get to Greenport? And she said, yes. Just go right on past the dining room table and turn left at the piano. That's not the gag, I told you. Well, Screwball Jake has a couple of twin kids. One's name is Xerxes and one's name is Jerxes. And they were doing their homework one time, and Xerxes said, who chopped down a cherry tree? And Jerxes said, Popeye. So Xerxes said, Popeye? And the other kid said, yeah. When George Washington's old man asked him who chopped down a cherry tree, he said, Pop, I did it.
You just barely did it, Senator. You
$1,000 on the left meter.
Oh, I wasn't interested. I couldn't win anything anyway, so I wasn't trying. I wasn't pizza.
Well, you couldn't do much good with that because since none of you topped Mr. Jordan, we send Mr. Jordan $25.
Another round of jokes will be coming up right after these important words from our fine sponsor.
Continue our contest of wit and humor. The next joke was sent in by J.G. Janicey of Hondo, California. And the subject of this joke, football. Football. Kick that one around.
Well, this happened this wonderful... actually, this afternoon, a great football day, you know, when the Army played Duke and Columbia played Brown and the Navy played Heck with Riverside Drive. And at one of our local... the couple of our local schools, little schools here, little prep schools, at one of their stadiums, there was a game between these two prep schools, temperature normal, and the other one was Gee Was I High. It's a nice little school we have here. And the teams were in the second quarter, and all of a sudden the referee noticed that one of the players had his helmet way up on top of his head, sticking up like a turban, balanced way up on top of the head. So he looked at the lineup, and he saw that it was a boy, one of the star players by the name of C. Merriwell, antiphlogistine, a very fine player. Matter of fact, he was a five-letter man, J-E-R-K-Y. So the ref walked over, and he says, hey, antiphlogistine, he says, pull your helmet down. He says, not going to protect your head that way. So the bright kid says, I know, but I can't pull it down. He says, well, why can't you? Isn't it your helmet? He said, yeah, it's my helmet, all right. He said, well, why don't you pull it down? He said, all right, nosy, as long as you're so persistent, I will elucidate. He says, you see that fellow over there on the other team, Lunkhead Laurie, do you see him? He says, boy, is he going to be surprised.
Surprised? What do you mean?
He says, because every time we play, he bumps heads with me. And this time I put a dozen rocks in my helmet.
You needed a few rocks on that gag, I think, Peter.
Just halfway up on the laugh meter, Ward. 500 this time.
So, Harry Hirschfield had his hand up first.
I've got a couple of football stories in my mind. One is an old one, I'm going to tell as a preface, and one I think is a brand new one. Little Sammy Ginsburg joins college, and right away they put him in a football team. And the coach is explaining, he's never been in football before, and he said, now, here's what you do. You hold the football, so, and so, and so, hold the football, and then you run over there and put the football down, then you kick the football, and after a while you take the football up again, then you hold it again and run with it. He said, no, I'll kick the football, I'll kick it to pieces. But I wouldn't hold the football. I ain't allowed to touch pigskin.
But the one I think this is a kind of a crazy story. Ivan Popnikov came from Moscow. He was a refugee here. And after he'd been here a while, a fellow said to him, Popnikov, how do you like America? He says, oh, I love America. I love everything about America. I love it. He says, are you getting into the spirit of the country? Not only business and things, but the sports. He says, yes, I love it. I love it. He said, do you ever go to the football games? He said, I couldn't afford the football games, but I listen on the radio to the football games. He said, do you listen to the football games? He said, I love We the People. The guy says, We the People? You've got your programs mixed up. He says, no, I notice when I listen on the radio, every time they run with the football, the people holler, Wee!
$1,000 on the laugh meter, Wart.
Copping Mr. Janicey, however, he holds his $10, and Senator Ford had his stand up second.
Well, Fanny Fiddlecroft says she knows all about football. Every time she meets a college boy, starts making passes. Well, Dopey Dildoc was talking to another lunkhead, and he said, I come from a football family. My biggest brother is a fine tackle. And my next biggest brother is a fine guard. And my next biggest brother is a fine back. And when I was born, the old man looked at me and said, this is the end.
That one made the top. 1,000 on the laugh meter.
And you, too, have topped Mr. Janicey, but he still holds his $10, and Joe Laurie's ready to go in this
one. Yeah, doing a scotch here. There's a preface, Ward. Scotchmore's sitting next to a fella in the football team. He says, you play this game in Scotland, football? He says, oh, aye, we do. He says, we play it at night. He says, why don't you play it in the daytime? He says, oh, if we play it in the daytime, we'd have to use a ball. The one I want to tell is a fella sitting next to Montgomery, little Montgomery. He says to him, he says, who do you think is going to win the Rose Bowl game this year? He says, well, I got all my money in Texas. He says, why, Texas isn't playing in the Rose Bowl this year. He says, I'm not talking about that Texas. I'm talking about income Texas.
Well, that would tax the meter to the very limit, too, Joe.
1,000 on the laugh meter.
Brings us to our next joke, which is from Mr. Edward J. Clark of Seattle, Washington, a long way away from here, and the topic this time, sailors this time. Sailors.
They're always appropriate.
So, Peter, move over to the drive and see how we come out with the sailors.
You know, I was trying to figure out today, Joe just said that, remind me, I was trying to figure out what ship some of the sailors were from that I saw today. And the ones that were going around with the girls, they all looked as if they were from the Enterprise. But this has nothing to do with the Navy. As a matter of fact, Ward, this happened in the office of the Merchant Marine, and they were signing on men for sea duty this particular day, and in walked little Paddy O'Houlihan. And Paddy wanted to be a sailor. He had studied to be a sailor, and he boned up on it and read books on it, and he knew all the decks and everything, you know, poker, pinochle, bridge, or everything. And he wanted to sign up with a cargo ship, and he walked in this day to try and get a job on a cargo ship, and he had a pretty good chance because he was half-loaded anyway, and he walked up to the guy behind the desk, and the fella started asking him questions. He says, may I have your name, please?
He says, Patrick Aloysius Dennis O'Houlihan.
He said, the born?
He said, there is a rumor to that effect, yes.
He said, where were you born?
He said, where was I born? He asks me, where was I born? Why, I have you know that I was born in the beautiful land where the snow frosts the top of the green mountains And in the springtime, the sun comes out and melts the snow, and the little rivulets trickle down the mossy mountains right into the distilleries. Ah, it's beautiful. He says, in other words, he says, if you must ask personal questions, I was born in Ireland.
Fellow says, I see. Well, have you ever been to sea?
He says, have I ever been to sea? How the dickens did you think I got over here? By taxi cab?
The laugh meter registers 1,000 for that joke, Ward.
Which automatically gives Mr. Clark $25. You boys are out for a joyride once again. Harry Hirschfield, I think, was first up on
well,
this.
Well, first a quickie. A girl, a little Maisie, walks into a photographer's store and she has a little snapshot of her sailor boyfriend. She says, this is my sailor boyfriend. I want to get this picture of him enlarged. The guy says, mounted. He says, wouldn't he look silly, a sailor sitting on a horse? But a fellow joined the Navy, and he was told, if you want to get along in the Navy, be tough as the next guy. Be tough. So he started to be tough. So he says, show me a Sergeant Marine, and I'll show you a dope. He got a little tap on his shoulder, looks up, and there's a 6'8" guy. He says, I'm a Sergeant Marine. He says, I'm a dope.
You're no dope for telling that, Harry.
1,000 on the lap meter.
However, it doesn't affect the scoring any. Senator Ford, well, I think he's ready, second.
This gag has nothing to do with the Navy either. Ditsy Palmwaddle once was a sailor. He worked on an ocean liner. And the first night out was a very dark night. And all of a sudden he hollered, man overboard, man overboard. The ship was stopped, and then he looked around and he saluted the captain and he said, I beg your pardon, sir, but I made a mistake. No man fell overboard. Captain gave the orders for full steam ahead and said, well, thank goodness no man fell overboard. So Ditsy said, no, you're right, it was a dame.
Wasn't dame enough or good enough to get better than 450 on that, Senator.
I'm glad for even decimal points on those.
Well, let's see what Joe Lorry can do about
that. Admiral Ingram was a guest at the Lambs Club last week for the morale night, and he told this story. It's an old story, but he told it very well. Hope I do. It's about a little barge with a cargo of oranges going across, and all it had was two sailors as a crew and a Scotchman as a passenger. And the Scotchman was sitting there on a rocking chair in the back of the boat. And they see a whale. They spy a whale. And the captain says, oh, this whale is a man-eating whale. He's terrible. He's a big guy. He'll upset this little boat. We've got to throw something over. So they threw the rocking chair over. And the whale grabbed the rocking chair, swallowed it, and kept following the boat. Captain got a little bit peeved. He says, I'll have to throw the cargo over. So he threw all the oranges over. And as they threw them over, crate after crate, the whale just grabbed the oranges and swallowed them and kept following the boat. Captain got a little tired again. He says, oh, boy. Well, the sailors will have to go over. So the two sailors got thrown overboard, and the whale got them. Kept on following the boat. Finally looked at the Scotchman. He says, well, Sandy, you'll have to go over. I'm sorry, but you'll have to go over. I got to save the boat. So in goes Sandy, and the whale swallows him, and the whale turns away. 2 weeks later, somebody catches the whale, and when they cut him open, they found a Scotchman sitting on the rocket chair selling the oranges to the two sailors.
1,000 on the laugh meter for that one, Ward.
That was a whale of a joke, Joe.
More fun, more jokes, coming up in a minute after this word from our...
Now here's a joke sent in by Clifford R. Rosa of Kenmore, New York, and it's on the subject of fortune teller. Fortune teller. Okay, Peter, let's hear Mr. Rose's joke and see what our studio audience thinks of it.
Well, this is about my old friend, Mr. Abercrombie Fafufnik. And this particular day, he was an awful bug on fortune tellers. He's always going having his palm read and the tea leaves and the coffee grounds and all these mystical things, you know. And this particular day, he was walking along the street and he was looking for a place to get his fortune told. He never was satisfied with what these other people had told him. So all of a sudden, he sees a big sign, and there's a big picture of a head on it. It says, phrenologist. Tell the future by the shape of your head. We don't read the leaves in your tea. We read the lumps on your cocoa. A little lump in the throat, too. So, anyway, he says,
sounds very intriguing. It says, I think I'll go in. He says, let the fella feel around the head for a while. He said, so if I don't get my fortune told, at least I'll get a scalp massage. So, so he walks in. He says, you'll pardon me. He says, you look like an A-number-one Yankee-doodle-ipsy-pipsy-gypsy. He says, tell me, please, what is going to happen to me in the future.
So the fella starts running the fingers over the skull, you know, and he says, he says, very interesting, very interesting. He said, this bump on the back of the head indicates that you have quite a mind. You have a great flair for curiosity. This is the bump of curiosity.
And Pufnik said, that's marvelous. That is wonderful. He says, that is supernatural. He says, when you say the bump on the back of my head is a sign of curiosity, he says, you are 100% correct. Because I looked in the shaft to see if the dumbwaiter was coming up, and it was coming down.
That one made the top. 1,000 on the laugh meter.
And automatically gives Mr. Rosa $25, and I think Senator Ford was the first one whose hand.
Well, here's a story that about Fred Allen, if I can get it straight, about fortune tellers. Seems that Fred was down at Coney Island some years ago, and he went into a tent, and he said to the gypsy, are you the gypsy mystic who can see all by looking into his eight ball? And the gypsy said, I'm the same, could be. So he says, well, can you... he says, can you tell me my name? The gypsy says, I'm a wandering gypsy. He says, and why are you wandering? He said, I'm wandering about my gas. He says, you mean you have run out of fuel? He said, no, I'm wondering why I can't gas your name.
1,000 on the left meter.
Harry Hirschfield had his hand up, second.
At a very swagger party, they were all sitting around, and Miss Van Eppes was sitting around with all her fancy finery, and she kept telling of all the expensive things she buys. She says, everything with me is the expensive stuff. She says, you know, a few years ago, I went to a fortune teller. $100 I paid this fortune teller. Very high price. And you know what she said? You are going to meet a very dark, dorm, handsome man. And you're going to be a millionaire. And you're going to have yachts and mansions. And the fortune came out true. I got all those things. So a little woman listening there says, huh, I only went to a fortune teller. She charged me 75 cents. And what did I get? A little fat shrimp, a little poor tailor. And the other one says, well, cheap is cheap.
1,000 on the lap meter.
But it doesn't affect the scoring any. Joe, are you in this round?
Yeah, Casey went to a crystal gaze and he says, you know, my partner Doyle died the other day. He says, and I want to know if he went to heaven or... So the crystal gazer says, give me $5 and I will look. So he gives him $5. Where is he? Well, your partner is just 15 feet from the pearly gates. He says, tell me more. He says, that'll cost you $5 more. So he says, here you are, $5 more. She says, now I see him 10 feet away from the pearly gates. Tell me more. It's cost you $5 more. All right, here's your $5. He says, now I see him just 5 feet away from the pearly gates. Just tell me more. She says, it'll cost you $5 more. He says, oh, well, if he can't jump the last 5 feet, let him go to the devil.
Well, that's also $1,000, Joe, on that one. But...
So join Can You Top This again next week, same time, same gang. Other jokes, some new, some old. Until then, we remain yours for bigger and better laughs.
Senator Ford.
Harry Hirschfield.
Bill Laurie Jr.
Peter Donald.
Ward Wilson.
And this is your host, Roger Bauer, saying so long. And take care of yourself until we meet again next time.